When you think about the Indian state of Goa, you might think about hippies and new age backpackers and various kinds of recreational substances, but Goa isn't just famous for that. Today, its relatively relaxed atmosphere has made Goa the home to a large number of Indian writers and artists. I'm David Rutledge. Welcome to the Earshot podcast and the final program in our series looking at contemporary Indian writing. Producer Roana Gonsalves has roots in Goa, and so that makes her the perfect guide to be taking us on a literary tour through this former Portuguese colony.
The footnotes of Indian history are about to take over the main text. You know what November does to the jacaranda tree? Well, that's what Goa has done for India. It added literary lilac, so to speak, to an otherwise green canopy. This tiny state continues to blossom time and again with thoughts, words and deeds to feed the life of the mind. In Goa today, even politicians write poetry and read them out in public whenever they spot an opportunity. Then, the writers of teatro, a popular performance tradition, write satire about them. Goa is also one of the few places in the world where Catholic nuns can study feminist theology and interrogate the central Adam's apple tenets of the Roman Catholic Church. Goa is also my grandmotherland, where my grandma Filomena and her big sister Umiliana grew up in a riverside house full of brothers and doctors. Their relatives studied at Goa Medical College, one of the oldest medical colleges in Asia. They probably heard the chuckle of the white-throated kingfisher, a distant cousin of the kookaburra. It's Goan in tooth and claw, mind you, hunting and breeding in local waterways. But Goa is often seen as nothing more than froth on a big cold beer. So un-Indian, with its booze so cheap, its beaches full of white bikinis and surf lifesavers in red and yellow, Australian red and yellow, its churches so colonial. Other Indians pretend to be teetotaling saints at home. But when they come to Goa, they binge drink, decompose in public, vomit their non-Goan wealth on the non-Goan casinos heavy on the Mandovi River, and they think Goan history is but a footnote to the more garrulous history of Mughal kings and blood spilled by the British. Journalist and founder of the publishing house Goa 1556, Frederick Nerona.
So people in Goa have a different political reality. It doesn't fit in very well with what we consider to be Indian, because the colonial reality is very different. You've had almost 4.5 centuries of Portuguese colonialism, not the British colonialism. It's not understood, it's not seen as a part of India. Most people think Goa is an island of India in that sense, which in some ways maybe it was. But, We often have a problem in even explaining the story to others, because it's so specific, so regional, so local, so hard to comprehend that people have not, it's like Indian writing, it's not become fashionable as yet to read, say, a Goan book. You know, increasingly it's happening now, it's slowly catching on. People are coming to terms with the reality that here's a subculture, which is part of India, but in some ways different.
This is Goa, land of many tongues, and roast tongue recipes, tongue lashings in Konkani, Marathi, Portuguese and English. The Konkani language itself is written in at least 5 different scripts: Roman, Devanagari, Kannada, Malayalam and Perso-Arabic. Actually, it was in the ebb and flow of this tongue-tied landscape that Indian print culture had its somewhat unexpected water birth. India's very first printing press landed in Goa in the 16th century.
Of course, the Chinese did have their printing presses in the 8th and 9th century, but this was the first movable type press that we've had. It reached here by accident. It was supposed to go to what was Abyssinia, that's Ethiopia. And it reached here by accident. There are different theories of how it came, why it came, you know, storm at sea or the emperor changed his mind there and things like that.
That first press was the placenta for the first book printed in India. It had a long title, Conversations on the Simples, Drugs and Medicinal Substances of India by Garcia da Horta. It was published in Goa in 1563. Okay, it may have been accidental, but that Goan legacy of print and publishing, although it unfolded slow as a new moon night, is now becoming a beacon in the literary world. Goa is home to some of India's best public libraries and independent bookshops. It is home to the writing retreats of Booker Prize winners like Kiran Desai, and writers who really should have won the Booker Prize, like Amitav Ghosh. Writers' festivals like the Goa Arts and Literature Festival, writing groups like the Goa Writers Group, and the major annual publishing event on the Indian calendar, the Publishing Next Conference. In some ways, Goa has always been a place of comings and goings, from Mormugao port, which facilitates over 50 million tons of traffic every year, to the hippies who flocked to Goa in the 70s, to the beach strip of North Goa with Russian signs advertising cheap rates for scooter hire. Here's writer, photographer and co-curator of the Goa Arts and Literature Festival, Vivek Menezes.
Due to the trade winds, there's an endless amount of records of people crossing the ocean, coming to Goa, and many of them settling in Goa. Even the founder community, some the community which is considered central to Goan identity, which is the Saraswats, only showed up in Goa around 900 years ago. The Portuguese are not the people who opened the international relationship for Goa, so to speak. The Portuguese themselves took power from a man who was born in the Mediterranean, who was a Turk. That's the Adil Shah. When the Portuguese came here, it opened definitely the floodgates to a European experience, because this was the first kind of a stronghold of the Europeans here, and the Portuguese at the same time immediately dominated the entire spice trade as well as the Indian Ocean. So things did change, but in fact Goa has always been known throughout history as a place that's open and welcoming to foreigners.
You know that all colonizers are equal, right? But actually some colonizers are more equal than others. The reign in Spain, British, are on a higher rung of the colonial ladder than, say, the navel-gazing Portuguese.
For the last 200 years of the colonial experience of the Portuguese, they didn't have the ability to project power to Asia. So it was very much dominated by the Goan elites. This was seen as repugnant by the British colonials. The Goans developed a confluential identity where they were comfortable being Western and trading with Westerners, or even dealing with Westerners across the table as Western. But when they went home or they went into the recess of the house, they were Indian. So this was seen as something that was suspect. Unfortunately, what happened after 1947 is that this attitude was inherited by the people who came to power in Delhi. They too started to look at Goa as somehow suspect. And to a large extent, it's quite ironic to hear Oxford-accented, English-speaking Delhiites kind of look down on Portuguese-speaking Goans for being somehow suspect, un-Indian. But unfortunately, that's what happened. However, 50 years later, I would say that has changed. Indians themselves have ditched some of those really antiquated ideas about purity, and they are racing to globalize. And now they're starting to see the value of what has existed and what has developed over 400 or 500 years. It's remained very attractive to foreigners as well as to kind of Indians who look for a gentler way of a gentler urban experience. So if in a number of ways it has started to be one of the premier or premium places to live in India, to work in India. And at the same time, it has developed very rapidly as a place for artists and writers to live in. And as a result of that, now all of a sudden we have centers of excellence in classical music, in literature, in poetry, in translation, and also in publishing.
We're constantly told that all Indians are equal. But of course, some Indians are more equal than others. The Gowda, Kunbi, Velip and Dhangar people, Goa's tribal Aboriginal people, are still some of the poorest of the Goan poor. Their struggles resonate with the struggles of the rest of the world's traditional custodians. They're like little Davids, using slingshots against the might of a Goliath that is the Indian state and mining companies.
तंतो नीचे डोंगरार पकले अपोइताय एत्या बत्या बायलाग तोड़े मुड़ीताय संतंतो नीचे डोंगरार पकले अपोइताय.
In Goa, you could say that public space wears a skirt with a rising hemline. Many urban middle-class women have moved here from other parts of India because of a sense of safety here. Women can loiter in Goa in ways that we certainly can't in Delhi or Kolkata or even Mumbai. But is elsewhere in India, patriarchy and the caste system, that pair of steel-capped boots, continue to trample across Goan public and private space. Some recent Goan writing is infused with nostalgia, a longing for old-world charm or saudade, which really means a form of upper-class, upper-caste male privilege. In contrast to this, writer, painter and educator Savia Viegas explores the lives of Goan women in her work.
Most of my books, fortunately or unfortunately, have strong women characters because I've grown up with strong women and I feel that I speak from the voice of my past. But I speak about the past without nostalgia because it's very important for me to root my writing in the present scenario in Goa. And I feel that is Goa's strength, to note its new directions, to note its fallacies, to note its good things. That's what I want to write about.
And here's Savia Viegas reading from her story, Thette. In the story, an old woman on her deathbed is pestered by a relative about the afterlife, only to be exposed to a secret about why the dying woman remained childless all these years.
Thette died in the monsoon of the year I was sent to boarding school. When she slipped into a coma, the candles were placed and Shemai would sit by her bedside, reading the prayers for the dying, pausing now and again in her recitations to probe Thette. Natividad, can you see the Lord coming for you in the hour of your death? Natividad, can you hear His good word? She would shout into Tete's ears continuously. Thette would shake her head from side to side and in pain. What do you see? Shemai would demand. What do you see? Tell me. A few days before her death, Thette seemed to recover, and Shemai intensified her grim queries. Do you hear the Lord's word, Natividad? Do you hear the Lord, Natividad? Do you see the Lord, Natividad? No. What do you see? I see Castel Carasillo holding his gonads, asking me to forgive him. It was his fault I did not have a child. I suffered. And it was then that she slipped into a coma from which she never recovered.
The final words of a dying woman trying to find closure in this world. Walk around Goa today and you'll see death and decay in many shapes, even as this small Indian state renews itself in the 21st century. If you take an aerial view, you'll see harakiri in progress, disembowelment by sand mining. If you take a selfie, it'll probably have a background of ancient houses whose once grand foreheads are now furrowed with neglect. Their fate is in the hands of the courts where property battles are fought between descendants who don't live in Goa anymore. If you take a look at the newspapers, death is also a booming revenue stream. It's a mark of prestige among the hoity-toity classes to take out expensive half-page and full-page newspaper ads in honor of ancestors long deceased.
In loving memory of Dona Maria Sangria Bolinha Gordinha Fernandes de Souza, who died 83 years ago at the age of 99.
In 1684, while John Bunyan was writing The Pilgrim's Progress in England, the regressive Portuguese colonizers of Goa banned the Konkani language. As a result, Konkani literature languished for centuries in this valley of death and censorship. One of Goa's most beloved writers is Damodar Mauzo, who writes in his beloved Konkani.
The place where I live in Goa, Madura, which is dominantly a Catholic region, The lifestyle of this region was not well depicted in literature, particularly in Konkani. The local ambience, the village ambience, the rural ambience could best be expressed, I think, in Konkani, because that is the language of the soil. I myself am a shopkeeper, so I have close contact with almost everybody. So almost every one of this village comes across the counter. Every time I find some seed, I felt like writing about them, and in all the characters around me appeared in my writings.
The precarious economic conditions of this small state, combined with a little bit of that ancient human medical condition, the travel bug, meant that while rich, lost tourists flocked to Goa to find themselves, many Goans left home to work in other parts of India and the world.
People were used to go to East Africa. Now, after the independence of African countries, they decided to move from East Africa to either UK or Canada or the States or some other places. And some prefer to go to Australia.
In one of Damodar Mauzo's stories, a mother asks a postman to read out a letter about her son in Australia.
Postmanan kadili cheat paina fude, rozalina kade, he cheat Anthony chi. Bari jale, verar ja paili. Bhui sampadan khatyachi notice merat saun, rozalin thatar vitar jalli.
She knew it was her son Anthony's even before Vasu had handed over the letter. Thank God, she had so been looking forward to it. Rosalina had been terribly upset ever since she had received the land acquisition notice. So thirsty, Vasu fanned himself with a bunch of letters. Could you give me a glass of water? Of course, come and sit in the veranda. Rosalina went in to fetch water. No wonder you're thirsty, it's so hot and humid today. I wonder what he's written, she thought as she filled the glass. Must have received my letter. Has he decided to come? Or has he written to tell me that he can't make it? She was anxious to read his reply, but her eyesight was growing weak these days. And even if she did manage to read, she found it difficult to understand some of the English words. As long as Denise had been around, she had not needed anybody's help. 2 years ago, her husband had died of a sudden heart attack, and now she was forced to rely on others to read her letters. Why not ask the postman to read the letter, she thought, as she came out with a glass of water. Joachim, her neighbor, would return home only in the evening, by which time her anxiety would have become unbearable. Here, Baba, here's your water. Handing him the tumbler, Rosalina asked, if you have the time, would you read the letter and tell me what it says, son? Of course, no secrets, I hope, he quipped as he slit the letter open. It's from Anthony, announced Vasu. He writes that he's planning to come home with his wife and children at the end of the month. Abel's written to him that he's engaged to an Australian girl. Both Anthony and Angela will be going to Australia from Kuwait and to Bahrain for the wedding in December. Anthony says he'll give you all the other details when he comes. Shall I read it all out?
Anthony. आणि बारीना सांग अंजला ऑस्ट्रेलियाक वयतली खंय हेर सगळें आपूण येतकीर डिटेल सांगता म्हणला वाचून दाखोवपाक जाय.
Another writer who's explored the lives of Indian workers overseas is Benjamin Daniel. He writes in Malayalam, the language of the state of Kerala. His book, Adujeevadam, translated into English as Goat Days, has won numerous awards. When I spoke with him, he told me the book was in its 75th edition. Here he is, reading from Goat Days.
Manushyan avante sarva kulsitha pravrthikal kondu shramichalum ee bhoomiyil ninnu jeevante thudippukal thudachu neekkuvan orikkalum saadhyamagilla ennu chinthicha oru kaalam koodiyanathu kazhinja ethrayo maasangalayi ee bhoomi chuttupazhinju chuttupazhuthu kidakkukayirunnu kattippazhutha മണൽത്തരികളല്ലാതെ മറ്റൊരു ജീവൻ്റെ കണിക പോലും ഈ ഭൂപ്പരപ്പിനു മേലെ കാണാനില്ലായിരുന്നു.
Winter was also the time when I learned that it was impossible to wipe out life on this earth, whatever man's misdeeds. For how many months had this desert been lying under scorching heat? There had been no sign of life on those burning sands. As the cold wind blew, signaling summer's end, a green carpet surfaced on the dry sand. This was within 2 days of the rain. It was as if all the sense of life had been lying dormant beneath that brown surface, straining to hear the music of resurrection. Those plants taught me life's great lessons of hope. They whispered to me, "Najib, adopted son of the desert, like us, you too must preserve your life and wrestle with this desert. Hot winds and scorching days will pass. Don't surrender to them. Don't grow weary, or you might have to pay with your life. Don't give in. Lie half dead, as if meditating. Feign nothingness. Convey the impression that you will never resurrect. Secretly appeal to Allah the Merciful. He will recognize your presence. He will hear your cries. And finally, an opportune moment will come for you. This hot wind will blow away. This heat will dissipate. The cold wind of time will beckon you. Then, only then, should you slowly raise your head from the earth, announce your presence, and then quickly spring to freedom. Bloom and come to fruit in the morrow." I lent my ears to the words of the little plants. I waited patiently for the opportune moment.
ചെടിക്കുഞ്ഞുങ്ങളുടെ വാക്കുകൾക്ക് ഞാൻ ചെവി കൊടുത്തു. ഞാൻ എൻ്റെ അനുകൂല കാലത്തിനു വേണ്ടി ക്ഷമാപൂർവ്വം കാത്തിരുന്നു.
ബെന്യമിൻ ഡാനിയൽ ഫീൽസ് ദറ്റ് ദിസ് ഈസ് ദി ഏജ് ഓഫ് ദ ഡെത്ത് ഓഫ് ദ ക്രിറ്റിക്. ഹി സേസ് ദറ്റ് റൈറ്റേഴ്സ് ഫെസ്റ്റിവൽസ് പെർഫോം ദി ഓൾഡ് റോൾ ഓഫ് ദ ക്രിറ്റിക് ആൻഡ് പീപ്പിൾ നൗ റിലൈ ഓൺ ദീസ് ഫെസ്റ്റിവൽസ് ഫോർ എൻ ഐഡിയ ഓഫ് വാട്ട് ടു റീഡ്. There are more than 50 writers' festivals across the country every year, but they're a new phenomenon for English language writing. In many Indian languages, literary festivals and gatherings, or Sahitya Sammelans, have been organized for decades. This year marked the 81st Sahitya Sammelan in the Kannada language, and it was celebrated with over 600 bookstalls, catering to thousands of readers. Writers' festivals are also important spaces for Indians to talk to each other, to access works in translation, to make sense of that glorious Tower of Babel that is Indian literature. Here's writer, translator and editor Antara Dev Sen.
Translation is essential for us, actually, to understand each other and also to understand ourselves. There has been translation from, say, Hindi to English or Malayalam to Tamil or Urdu to Kannada for a very long time. But now English as a link language has become more important because English is not just a language of India but also the language of South Asia and beyond. It's a language of the world.
Absolutely, yeah. Language is a tool. It depends how you use it.
I'm at the Goa Arts and Literature Festival, a boutique festival. The literary conversations here are easygoing. A discussion on translation is in progress.
When did you think you knew enough Marathi to be able to translate the novel? Then, in the back of the head, there is the thing, let's see whether he answers in Marathi or English, and then we'll judge.
In a multilingual country like India, although translation is key for the left hand to understand what the right hand is doing, the number of translations of literary works from one Indian language to another is still quite small. Neeta Todne, a Goan writer and academic, wrote a collection of poetry in Marathi and then had it translated into three other languages, Konkani, Hindi and English, and published them side by side in the same book. She reads from her poem Zaktana, translated as While Living. written from the point of view of a woman speaking to her daughter.
रोज मी थोडी थोडी जगते तुझ्या आनंदाचं चांदणं घरभर पसरताना पाहून. रोज मी थोडी थोडी जगते तुझ्या आनंदाचं चांदणं घरभर पसरताना पाहून. रोज मी थोडी थोडी मरते. रोज मी थोडी थोडी मरते तुझ्या स्त्रीत्वाचं.
आय लिव्ह अ लिटल एव्हरी डे वॉचिंग द मून लाईट ऑफ युअर हॅपीनेस स्प्रेड. आय डाय अ लिटल एव्हरी डे वॉरिंग अबाउट द प्रोटेक्शन ऑफ युअर वुमनहूड. I liberate myself a little every day, forgetting my maturity in your innocent childhood. I am amused a little every day, living in the world of your dollhouses. I experience a little spring every day, watching the rainbow of your body and mind change. I'm a little ambiguous every day, seeing the horizon of your experiences extend. I break a little every day, seeing you connect yourself to the crowd. I feel the colors of life every day to see you shaping into a human.
रोज मी थोडे थोडे जीवनाचे रंग अनुभवते तुला माणूस म्हणून घडताना पाहून. तुला माणूस म्हणून घडताना पाहून.
I think Goa has long been a meeting place of cultures, meeting place, clashing point, whatever you want to see it as. There have been some bad sides, there have been some good sides. It's a mix of both. And if this trend carries on, you know, you could see a lot of interesting things coming out from here. People jokingly say, some of our writers in the Goa writers used to jokingly say that our goal is global domination, you know, then they used to have a big laugh after it. But if we keep on repeating this, we might believe it after some time, and it could attract, you know, a few more writers to come here and see Goa as a good place for writing.
Goa today is the fecund green of the paddy fields, the coconut palms in the monsoons like natural wind farms, the Mangeshi temple, the Safa Shahuri Masjid, the white church of the Immaculate Conception in Panjim with its impossibly steep steps leading as if to Mars, and the State Library of Goa smelling on the outside of the city and all its refuse but smelling on the inside of fresh stories. All this tells us what we really already know, that rather than Goa becoming more Indian, the rest of India ought really to become more Goan.
Rowena Gonsalves bringing us to the end of the final program in our series On the Tip of a Billion Tongues. That was written and produced by Rowena with Claudia Taranto, and the sound engineer was Timothy Nicastri. You can find the entire four-part series on the website, abc.net.au/rn. Look for Earshot on the program menu, or you can find us via the ABC radio app. And I'm David Rutledge. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.